Blog Talk Radio.
This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Tuesday night, September the 2nd, 2014. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We are back once again, our third night in a row. It's like a telethon. We're just on every night. I feel like Jerry Lewis. Hey, lady! But we're not here trying to collect any money. We're just here because it's fun. We're talking football. We're having a good time. And my co-host has not joined us yet because it's a tricky situation to set up to do the show on Skype. You can't call in to the show until the show actually starts. So it's not like before where Jason would call the guest line, which, by the way, is area code 646-595-4534. If you want to just call in like a normal call on a phone line, that's how you reach us. But now on Skype, it's a different situation. You have to click a button on the show page that says call in to the show via Skype, but you can't click that button until the show technically starts. So a minute ago, the show technically started, and Jason was supposed to have pushed the button to call in, but he was explaining to me before. If you remember, if you were with us a couple nights ago when we were trying to live cast the show during our fantasy draft, he did not join us until about 3 minutes into the show, and he was trying to explain to me that you have to actually sign in to Blog Talk Radio in order to call in via Skype, and you have to go through some hoops. You have to jump through some hoops to call in. So he was explaining that it was a little more difficult than just calling in, but he did it last night just fine. He got in, you know, not long after the theme music ended, but tonight, for some reason, it's going slowly. He's not here yet, and we're just waiting on Jason to join us. Waiting for his name to pop up on my screen here in the studio, and then I can click him and let him in, and we can get started with our show. We got a big one in store tonight, and not only is our NFC preview show, but also our Super Bowl predictions. And the Thursday night pick is all coming up once we get underway. And my co-host Jason joins us now. A little tough to get in tonight, huh?
Yeah, the first attempt failed and did not let me back in for a couple of minutes after that. So I apologize for not being on time here tonight.
Well, I was explaining, it's a little trickier than normal. Just calling in is not really an option on Skype. You have to wait until the show starts and then try to get in. And if the first attempt fails and it takes a little while to get back on the horse, then you might miss a couple of minutes. So that's what happened. But you're here now. We're ready to rock and roll.
Let's do it.
All right. Like I said, we got a big show. We got the NFC preview, the Super Bowl prediction, the Thursday night pick. Our VIP after show, we'll talk about our Buster Draft. We talked about the fantasy league that we invented where you draft bad players on purpose, trying to rack up the points as they make mistake after mistake. And we had that draft a half hour ago, and we'll talk about the results of that at 10:30 after this show is over, an hour from now.
I have to say it was a quite fun, quite snappy little draft, and a surprising amount of strategy involved. So we'll talk about that after this hour's up.
Absolutely. All right, let's get it started. Who you got in the NFC East?
NFC East. Let me just grab my little kitty cat notepad here. I'm running out of pages, by the way, so I think this is only going to get me to about week two of the show, and then I will have to move on to another notepad to try to beat you with this year.
I'll have to buy something with sparkly glitters on it or something.
Yeah, well, I have a two 2-year-old girl, so I'm sure there's plenty of girly little notepads in the house that my wife's accumulated. All right, in the NFC, I almost said AFC, in the NFC East, I am going to go with Philadelphia. I'm going to take the Eagles. I struggled a little bit with this division, especially considering I think Washington's going to be a little better this year. Just getting rid of Mike Shanahan is going to improve that team. RG3, though, is still worrying me. I watched him a little bit in the preseason. He's still limping around quite a bit out there. Doesn't look as far removed from that injury. I guess when your leg just turns sideways randomly when nobody hits you, it could be expected that it's going to take you a while to recover from that. But Philadelphia really broke out in a big way last year. Nick Foles had one of the greatest underappreciated quarterback performances of all time with him. I mean, it just awesome touchdown interception ratio, highly accurate, made everything happen. That offense just hummed right along once they installed him as the starter. And I just think that's going to continue on. The Giants make too many mistakes, and I think the Cowboys may end up having a historically bad defense this year, especially without the great Sean Lee. You and I joked about the over-under on how long it's going to take Chris Collinsworth on a primetime Cowboys game to mention the fact that his favorite player to slurp, Sean Lee, is no longer out there. And my estimation is the first running play up the middle that doesn't get stuffed. And he'll just, well, that's where Sean Lee normally would have been, Al. And that's it. You're done. And see how many times after that. You can have a Sean Lee drinking game for every Cowboys game Chris Collinsworth calls this year to see how many times he calls the name Sean Lee. Even though the guy is out for the year, we joked about this a lot last year. I think it's just going to be intolerable this year. But the Cowboys are really set up to be just dreadful. We'll get into that a little bit in a Buster draft, considering that there are team defenses that got drafted, and you can guarantee the Cowboys were one of them. I think they are on the path to being a really, really rotten team, which is kind of the opposite of a lot of the AFC teams, where they have the really bad offenses and the really good defenses. It's one of those situations where they have a really good offense and just an incredibly awful defense. There's another team in the NFC, a couple of them actually. So the NFC seems to have all the great offensive, horrible defensive teams. The AFC's got the opposite of that. Sort of interesting little dynamic there. But I do like the Eagles. I like that high-tempo offense. I don't know if that gets you all the way to a Super Bowl, but it definitely sends people on their heels and will be good enough until playoff time, because you kind of saw them in the playoffs. I believe it was against the Saints, just, you know, bad weather. Everything kind of has to slow down, and I think that's the way that you beat that team. But you're not going to really see that until playoff time, because they're going to play enough awful teams during the regular season that they're going to get their 10-11 wins.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that is that Philadelphia hosted the New Orleans Saints in that playoff game, and pretty much nobody thought that the Saints were going to come in off of their cozy home dome advantage that they usually have and walk into Philadelphia on the road with all the bad weather and beat them in a playoff game. But that's exactly what they did, because, like you said, when you get the elements involved and you get the stakes are a little higher, the Eagles did not have what it took to advance to the next round. But for the fifth division in a row, however, I'm going to agree with you and take the same division champion. I will take the Eagles to repeat and win the title again. Those other three teams in that division, they might be awful. They might range from okay to god-awful. And because it's the NFC East, the media's favorite division by a mile, there's no division in football that gets talked about more than the NFC East, and it's quite sickening. But those teams are so mediocre, all of them. You know, Philadelphia, I don't know how special they're going to be, but I'm going to take them to win the East anyway. You know, healthy Jeremy Maclin coming back, adding to the helter-skelter offense. You know, everyone talks about how Nick Foles can't possibly repeat that performance from last year as far as, you know, two interceptions the entire year. That just seems like a complete fluke. And I agree with that, but it's still kind of scary that that was his first year in Chip Kelly's offense, and that's how well he performed. Ooh, what's going to happen in year two? You know, it's a joy to watch Shady McCoy back there in the backfield work. Add in Darren Sproles to the mix for a little pass-catching spice out of the backfield. You're missing DeSean Jackson now, but I don't know if they're going to miss him. I think they've got enough where they're really not going to miss DeSean Jackson. I don't know. It's crazy to say that they won't miss DeSean Jackson. He's such a dynamic player, but the Eagles seem to have what it takes to lose someone like him. That terrible pass defense will torpedo them again in the playoffs like they did against the Saints, though. Yeah, Washington, you know how I feel about Robert Griffin III. I call him the cowboy because he tried to cowboy up through that knee injury. You talk about his knee dangling off and it's hard to recover from that. Look, Cowboy knew his knee was dangling off because he was limping around the entire damn game before it finally collapsed on him in the fourth quarter with nobody touching him. I still can't believe he did that. That's as much the Shanahan's fault as it is Archie 3. The Shanahan shouldn't have put him in that position, but Griffin should have been smart enough not to put himself in that position. That defense was already unimpressive of Washington's. Now that ageless tackle machine London Fletcher's gone, they might be even worse than normal. Now they add DeSean Jackson, giving them another big weapon. RG3 really has no excuse to succeed now. He's got Alfred Morris in the backfield is just as steady as they come. He's got DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon as your top two wide receivers. You got Jordan Reed at tight end, who looks like he's going to be a stud. Really no excuses for RG3 this year. I don't know why the fuck Jim Haslett is still the defensive coordinator, though. You had a chance to sweep everybody out of there and you let him hang around for no good reason. I have never really seen anything out of him to make me think that he deserves to still have his job. The Dallas Cowboys, the laughingstock of the league, because their expectations are always sky high. They never really shine through. Their prize addition on defense is really, it might be Henry Melton. Really? That's your big upgrade after all the losses and all the bad defense you've played over the years? That's what's going to turn things around? And they're really relying on a mid-30s quarterback coming off back surgery to keep the offense going? That might just completely fall apart. You talked last night about Pittsburgh and how they might be on the precipice of being one of the worst teams in the league because a couple of things can break here and there. Dallas, I think a couple of things can break here and there, and they might end with the 4-12 season. You just never know. They cut DeMarcus Ware. They lost Sean Lee, as you talked about. They lost Orlando Scandrick for four games due to suspension. That defense just might be god-awful, and there's nothing on offense that might save that. And then speaking of god-awful, Eli Manning just forgot how to play football last year. If he bounces back, the Giants might have something, but I don't know how you can really count on that to happen. Got a new offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo. Got a new offensive line that – you know, Eli's been getting pummeled under the old line, so they've switched him out, got some new guys in there. I'm still not buying it. I still don't think it's going to result in a complete turnaround for the Giants. I think Rashad Jennings might be a bright spot in the backfield, but, you know, that's not a guarantee either, obviously. Their defense might be their saving grace. They might grind out some low-scoring games. I kind of like adding Walter Thurman and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie to their pass defense, which is already 10th best in the league last year. That's kind of sneaky. I don't think a lot of people realize that the Giants' defense has kind of bounced back from their woes from a few years ago. But still, it's all about Eli bouncing back, and I'm not buying it.
Yeah, honestly, you know, you're talking about Eli Manning there, and something popped into my mind here. Could he possibly be, if we really broke it down, the worst best quarterback that we've ever seen? I mean, this is a two-time winning Super Bowl quarterback who also at times can look like the worst quarterback in football. And who else has really shared in that? And that, not just bad for a game, bad for months. I mean, you know, you can take any Super Bowl winning quarterback and throw them out, and they'll all have bad games. I mean, we saw Brett Favre, what did he throw, seven interceptions in that one game? That playoff game against the Rams,
Oh.
You know, yeah, you can individually have a horrible game. You just had a bad day. But Eli Manning, for a quarterback of his stature, to be as bad as he was for an entire season. He was the number one pick in our Buster draft. A two-time winning – Tom Brady wasn't. Peyton Manning – none of these guys who've gone out and won Super Bowls have that awful, like, Jekyll and Hyde tendency of Eli Manning, and he'll drive you crazy. And it's just like you said, if the little light bulb goes off for him and he figures it out, they could very easily just turn this thing around and win that division. Because he has the ability. He has the talent. But I just don't think he has – I don't think he has the confidence. Eli Manning could be due, I would say here, for a change of scenery. I think the smart thing for him to do would be to play out his contract, get out of town, go start over somewhere else. Because I just don't see it ever happening again for him in New York.
Is that in his DNA to sort of – make that mental decision that it's best to move on and pack up? He strikes me as the type that just wants to stay in his little bubble, in his cocoon, and just hope that everything gets better and ride out the storm and kind of stay sheltered. I might be completely stereotyping him due to his sort of downbeat attitude and his personality, but he strikes me as a lifelong giant, no matter how bad things get. But that's just,
you know, well, look at the way it all got engineered for him to end up in New York. I mean, if this is the
right.
Oh golly, you know, if that's his demeanor, why would they have pulled all of these strings for him to not go to San Diego? I mean, maybe it was the family who was driving this. Maybe it was an agent who was driving
definitely
this.
Definitely his father was behind all
yeah,
that. Yeah,
but so I could see it happening where if that city turns against him, the smartest thing to do would be to get him out of that city. Send him to Arizona. Send him to, you know, he could pull a Kurt Warner. You know, he could resurrect his career in Arizona just like Kurt Warner did. He went from the Giants to the Cardinals. And, but you could see quite a few landing spots that would be safe for him. And I honestly think at this point the best thing to do would be to get him out of New York. This won't happen for a couple of years. This isn't going to happen. You know, they're not going to trade him. This is going to be, I think he plays out his contract and goes somewhere else.
You might have that nailed on the head right there. Okay, Fantasy Football Rush Radio, listen up. Mike, Cassandra, here we go. NFC North, time to break it down. Jason, what's it look like to you?
Well, at least this year I didn't have the little C on my sheet like I did last year for Central. It's not the NFC Central. Last year, I'm actually sitting here looking at my sheets. Oh, and by the way, last year in the NFC East, I had the Giants. I had the Giants going to the Super Bowl.
Yes, you did.
Oh, no. you know, we already talked about Shanahan. So, and one douchebag coach leaving town having a possible positive impact on his team. Same thing happened with Detroit. And Detroit is my NFC North champion this year. They melted down with about three or four games left to go. Detroit actually had the inside track to win that division last year and went through a late-season collapse that didn't get a lot of press.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you there. Everything got very silent. I was like, uh-oh. Yeah, Detroit went through a very late-season collapse that I don't think got a lot of press that it should have. I know Jim Schwartz was already on his way out of town, but that team has way too much talent on offense and on defense with a new coach, with some new leadership, with a new voice. Not a lot of changes, so this is really a guy who came in and is taking over the same team, which is the best kind of situation to be in. They're not pulling like Denver and some of these other teams where it's like, oh, we identified a flaw in our team and we've got to just load up like they did, like Denver did on defense. No, this is a very – Detroit's bringing almost everybody back. That team has way too much talent, a little bit better leadership. This is a very competitive division too, so you're not going to see that 13 or 14-win team in this division. There's way too much – you know, they're just going to eat each other alive in that division. I have Detroit sneaking this one out with the Packers as a wild card out of that division. And again, Green Bay, as long as you have Aaron Rodgers and you keep him healthy, or just healthy enough to come back and throw a cover zero bomb to Randall Cobb against the Bears, right at the end of the season. As long as you get 12 games out of Aaron Rodgers, you will make the playoffs, no matter how bad that Green Bay defense is. They're trying to improve it. That's not really a team, though, that does anything through free agency. That's a team that's built from within. It helped them win a Super Bowl, but that defense, you know, Nick Collins having that career-ending neck injury, I think, is actually having a bigger impact on that team than is getting any press. And again, it's Green Bay, so you don't get a lot of national coverage. But that was sort of the backbone of that secondary, and now he's not back there, so they drafted Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. It's going to take a while to get him up to speed. So don't look for Green. I look for Green Bay to maybe have some early struggles and then kind of come on late to surge to that wild card spot just ahead of the Bears, which I think cohesively has the best offense in the league. We talked about this last year. They have the best quarterback, receiver, running back tandem, and I think they still do. And now you've got Alshon Jeffery added into that. So now you've got two top flight receivers, a tight end who likes to beat up his own teammates as much as he does his opponents, in Martellus Bennett, and then you have Matt Forte and Jay Cutler. So great offense, but they're going to have the same problem Dallas has. They have no defense. I know they're trying to improve that, but the Bears' defense is putrid, and it will be putrid all year. And Minnesota's just – there's not a whole lot you can say about the Vikings. I think Teddy Bridgewater will be the answer for them long-term. He looked good in the preseason. Of all the rookie quarterbacks, he was one of the best-looking ones, and again, didn't get a lot of press. Played very solid in the preseason, but you know they've got Matt Castle, who he won't win you many games, but he also won't lose you many games. Christian Ponder got held on to for whatever reason, maybe a money issue. Don't know why they just – maybe pride that they just don't want to cut bait with Christian Ponder. Maybe it was too high of a draft pick just to let him go. But Minnesota's kind of bad, so I'm going to go with Detroit to win the division. Packers edge out the Bears for one of those two wild card spots.
Yeah, we definitely agree that Minnesota's the one team in this division you don't want to pay too much attention to. There's not much there. You just wait to see when Teddy Bridgewater gets his shot. He seems like the best bet, but he's going to sit for now. Mike Zimmer and Norv Turner bring very good reputations, though, so there might be some improvement in the future for the Vikings. I wondered what's going to happen this year. They're on grass. They're playing outdoors, so Adrian Peterson, Cordero Patterson, explosive athletes, but will it get taken away a little bit being on grass? That's about the only thing to really pay attention to in Minnesota. We agree that the three teams to keep an eye on in the North are Green Bay, Detroit, Chicago. And we agree that Green Bay and Detroit are the two teams that are going to rise above and make it into the playoffs out of the NFC. And we have the order switched. That's the only difference. We finally disagree on a division champion. You're going a little bit out on a Detroit to emerge over Green Bay. I'll take the Packers to win the division once again. But that Detroit point that you brought up, that there's an actual adult at head coach now, and how much of a difference is that going to make now that Jim Schwartz is out of there? I mean, Jim Caldwell, I don't know how great he was with the Colts. I don't know if he'd be much of an impact, but good Lord, he's so much more of a professional than Jim Schwartz. It's such a breath of fresh air for the Lions to have an actual grown person at coach instead of a raging idiot. That Detroit D-line is also fun to watch. They just go for blood, man. They don't care. And Ndamukong Suh he doesn't stop until he breaks somebody's neck on every single play. Golden Tate now, Megatron's buddy. That should be a boost for that Detroit offense. They're going to be fun to watch as always. And that running back tag team is formidable as well, even in Detroit. Joique Bell and Reggie Bush. Your boy Reggie Bush, you seem to draft him in every fantasy draft, but there's a good reason for that. He's very talented. And I'm the one that tried to take the chance on him. I remember his rookie year, I drafted him, I believe, at the end of the first round. And it didn't quite work out for me, but you know, I noticed that talent that he had very early. But yeah, I think he might be settling into that role there, that he's not the every down back at all. But when he gets his hands on the ball, he still has the potential to just explode and make incredible open field plays that leave your mouth dropped. But their secondary still sucks. So that's basically why I got Green Bay to emerge over them to win the division. Green Bay, this is scary. Their offensive coordinator, Tom Clemens, wants to push the pace. Really? They want Aaron Rodgers to play even faster? They want that offense to get even faster? They want Eddie Lacy to have even more opportunities to take advantage of a gas defense and, you know, just guys dragging their tongue trying to keep up with these Packers playmakers? That's scary. They really might have a special team there if they can keep the pace up and if they can keep Aaron Rodgers protected. That's a real big key, that offensive line, trying to keep him in one piece. Roided up troglodyte, my guy, Clay Matthews, got Julius Peppers on the other end to try to balance. The reason I like the Peppers pickup is just because it's risk-free. There's nothing to lose there. Just pick him up. The Bears let him go. He was making way too much money, so they cut him. They should have cut him. He wasn't producing commensurate to his salary at all. And the Packers get a freebie. Just pick him up, see if he's got something. If not, get rid of him and then find somebody else. So no pressure there really at all. Just, you know, go in there and see what you got. But, yeah, roided up troglodyte needs some help because, as I've been saying for a couple of years now, when he's off, that whole defense is off. But when he's on, he's just a force. So we'll see if Peppers provides the help that he needs. Yeah, your guy Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to try to shore up the DBs there. They need some shoring up. They need some help back there. But really, ultimately, I think that's the difference between Green Bay and Detroit is they both got explosive offenses. But if Green Bay's D can perform just a little bit better, if they can make that one last pass, knock it away at the end of the game, Detroit's secondary seems to be the type to allow that last pass in for a touchdown to win the game. You know, they're both going to be in some high scoring affairs, but Green Bay's D just a slightly bit better to overcome. And Chicago, oh, where do I start? I could go on all night about the Bears, but I'll make this quick. That's the best offense that city's ever seen. If Cutler gets hurt, they're sunk. We saw last year how they managed to survive with Jake McCrown, Josh McClown, whatever the hell his name is. If you want to count on that happening again with their new backup, Jimmy Clausen, yeah, you go ahead and bet on that. I'm not betting on that. And the defense, as much as they tried to bring in personnel to help steady that horrible, horrible run defense, Mel Tucker, the D coordinator, no track record of knowing how to run a defense. I know he was running Lovie Smith's defense last year, but I think it's all about personnel. I think Lance Briggs might be done as an impact player, and once he's not making tackles out there, there's no one left, and that's not going to really change. And it's still a bad secondary. There's still terrible safeties. And the special teams look like it's taking a big step down now that Devin Hester's gone, and he was bad anyway before he left. But now that you lose that threat, it's just downhill from there as far as the Bears' special teams go. And Joe DiCamillo seems like he's terrible at that job as well. It's not looking good for Chicago. I still love the Bears. I had high hopes for them, but I don't think it's going to work out for them this year.
Yeah, why does it seem like every time that I can remember, and it's only happened a couple of times, where when the Bears get a really good offense, their defense just goes to shit. They had the year, I believe at the time it was Eric Kramer who had set all their passing records, but they were losing games 41-38, and it was just an absolute horrible defense, but they were putting up all the points. Then they followed that up a couple of years later with Jim Miller, who was lighting the world on fire offensively for that Bears team. Every time they just can't have both. They can't have a good defense and a good offense at the same time. And it's almost to the extreme this year, because this is the absolute best offense they've ever had, ever. My lifetime. Mm-hmm. Best ever. Anybody who wants to piss and moan about Cutler doesn't know football. And I know we both have lived through that, being both from Chicago, we know that they're probably already clamoring for Jimmy Clausen or
oh God,
this Fails guy or anybody else who they can trot out at quarterback. The first time Cutler throws a pick, you're going to hear on the post game show, "Ah, get him out of there.
Cutler can't win. He's a loser.
He's got the sugar diabetes."
Oh God, he's not perfect. We get it. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, he was walking around at the mall with his girlfriend. That really happened, people. That really happened. They were complaining about that when Cutler got injured in that NFC Championship game against the Packers, that the next day he was at the mall with his girlfriend. I guess he was just supposed to be in intensive care the whole time.
He was walking up the steps to the restaurant. His knee's fine. He's a faker.
This is all real. We're not even exaggerating this. We're probably underplaying this a little bit. They just cannot put it together. That's why I can't take. I struggled with this division because there are three legitimate playoff teams capable of coming out of that division. Surprisingly, I took the Lions to win the division. Just because I think they yacked it up last year, and they will score points, and I don't think their coach is going to cost them games this year like he did last year.
Yeah. I don't pay hardly any attention to preseason football, but I've had the Bears as a Super Bowl contender in my mind all off season until I saw about 5 minutes of their defense on like a Friday night edition of Monday Night Football, and I was like, oh, their run defense still blows. I'm not taking them to get to the playoffs.
You know, and you'd think in this day and age with the pass-happy NFL, you wouldn't make it because of your pass defense. They're just completely doing this inside out. They had that game last year when they needed to win a game for the division title against Philadelphia, who was playing for absolutely nothing. And LeSean McCoy must have averaged 20 yards a carry against that Bears defense, and it was just an absolute blowout.
That game was over before the Bears got off the plane.
Yeah, so and you should not play that way. Like, it wasn't coaching. You know, the coaches weren't. Mark Trestman wasn't out there opening up lanes for LeSean McCoy.
Well, that's my thing, is Mel Tucker hasn't proven to me that he's got the knowledge to do something about the terrible personnel on defense. So that's just a terrible combination as far as I'm concerned. It's the players, but it's also the coaching can't really overcome the bad players. So it just seems like there's no hope to me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
NFC South, what are you looking at?
I'm going worst to first here this year. I'm going to take the Atlanta Falcons to win the NFC South.
Oh, my God. You're actually picking the Falcons to do something good?
I am. I look at that team. I believe that, and this is, I'm probably in the minority here, that offense will be better without Tony Gonzalez. Strictly from the standpoint that he became Matt Ryan's security blanket, but almost to his detriment, that Ryan locked in on him so much in third down situations, and everybody knew that that's where the ball was going, that his absence is going to force him to utilize his receiving core better, and that's a stellar receiving core. Absolutely phenomenal. Roddy White, Julio Jones, Harry Douglas, great receiving core. They don't have a pass-catching tight end anymore. So he's going to be forced to go outside, use his stable of running backs as well. I don't think Steven Jackson will need to be relied upon as much. They brought in Devontae Freeman. They still have Jacquizz Rodgers. So I think you'll kind of have almost like a situation like what they have up in Detroit, where they're just going to kind of do this running back by committee. But I think it's going to work for them. Their defense is bad. That defense is never – it's weird because Mike Smith is a defensive coach. And that defense has never been very good. And ever since the Packers just handed it to them in that playoff game, the year the Packers went to win the Super Bowl, it was like they hung 48 on them, and the Falcons decided, we need more offense. We gave up 48 points. So the problem wasn't that we gave up 48. The problem was that we didn't score 49. I thought it was flawed thinking back then, and it's still haunting them ever since. I think their defense will be better, and all it needs to do is be a little bit better. And as bad as they were record-wise last year, they were actually in a lot of games. So if there's a worst-to-first candidate in the NFL, and there's always one every year, I'm going with Atlanta. No disrespect to New Orleans. That's still a very good team. I just think they're going to come up a little bit short. I think they're just going to miss out on a wild card spot. The other two teams in that division are non-factors to me, including Carolina. I think Carolina is going to be that team who's set up for the big fall this year. Way too much went their way last year. Everything went their way. And I don't think it was reality. I think they had their nice little run, but I don't see them anywhere even close to repeating that. I think they finish maybe 500. And Tampa's rebuilding. When Luke McClown is your starting quarterback, or whoever it is, when that's the guy, you decide, yeah, that's the guy we need. That's the missing piece. No hope there. And that's a good defensive team. Sadly, the offense isn't going to get it done. He's thrown to some nice receivers. I know I'm sure they brought him in to just not make the big mistakes, but he's just a placeholder until they can probably draft themselves a quarterback after this year. Because there's really nobody in line behind him that stirs up any confidence that's going to really be the answer. So I'm going to go Atlanta, New Orleans, Carolina, Tampa.
Wow. So no Carolina in the playoffs? All that after last year, every time they had an obstacle in their way, they knocked it down every time. A proving ground game came up. They proved themselves and stepped over every hurdle and made it into the playoffs and had the bye and hosted the playoff game. No playoffs at all after all of that?
No, because, again, they spent so much time proving everybody wrong. Well, now they've kind of got the target on their backs. This isn't going to be the same kind of rise that they had where everybody can kind of gel together, and you know, it's everybody against us. No, now it's everybody out for you. And Cam Newton's a little nicked up. I don't particularly like that team this year. I didn't like them last year. Obviously, nobody had any idea they were going to do that. Sometimes you can kind of have that 1 year wonder, and I think that's the Panthers. I think they're set to fall back a little bit this year.
Wow, no Riverboat Ron to make it back. Boy, I tell you, I completely concur.
you were totally setting me up for that, too.
Yeah, Cam Newton's throwing to high school receivers. Who's out there? His best receiver last year was 85. Now, who's he throwing to? I know after this kid, Kelvin Benjamin, he better be a monster because they ain't got nothing behind him. Greg Olsen, the tight end, is that their other best weapon? I love Cam Newton as an athlete. I love any quarterback that's his own goal line back, because every time they get within the five, Cam's like, I'm calling my own number. Fuck everybody else on this team. I'm taking it in myself. I'm doing my Superman pulls. I'm going to steal the spotlight because that's my personality. I kind of like that chutzpah he got when he does that. But serious, who's he going to throw to? I can't trust Carolina to get back to the playoffs because I don't trust the receiving core. I don't trust the running backs behind him. I don't trust Cam's ankle. Concerning. That doesn't seem to be completely healed yet. And the offensive line doesn't help. The defense should still be fun, but I can't take Carolina. Just like you, so many things went right for them last year, and I don't think so this year. I kind of like the Atlanta bounce back theory, but I have them falling short of the playoffs as well. I'm going to take the Saints to win that division, even though there's a lot of people falling in love with Brandon Cooks as a slot receiver option, as a newcomer that's going to get into this high-powered offense. I think if there's one thing we've learned about Drew Brees over the years, that he doesn't give a rat's ass who's open. He's going to the open man downfield. It could be Robert Meacham. It could be Lance Moore. It could be Marcus Colston. He just doesn't care. He'll go to whoever he thinks is gives him the best chance to score. And half the time it's going to be Jimmy Graham anyway, so it almost doesn't matter. But I love the offense as always. I love the addition of Hooks. Just, you know, take it easy on the preseason love for him, but I do like the addition. I like Pierre Thomas being ready for a bigger role in the backfield now that Sproles is gone. I think that's going to be a very interesting rotation back there to see who emerges between Thomas and Mark Ingram and Kyrie Robinson. The difference might be that defense, actually, because they added Jarris Bird to play safety, to play free safety, and you add him to strong safety Kenny Vaccaro. That's a powerful safety duo. Up front, Junior Gallette, Cameron Jordan. That's a powerful pass-rushing duo. New Orleans looks pretty loaded from top to bottom. I like them to have a really big year. Atlanta, their O-line has to get a lot better for them to have any improvement. Ryan needs protection to pull off any of those weapons, those options that he has that you talked about, Julio Jones, Roddy White, Harry Douglas. It's key that they drafted somebody from the Matthews clan to go in there for that offensive line that, you know, if Jake Matthews can glom any knowledge and any talent off of his talented family members, that'll help. But good Lord, does anyone want to rush the passer on that team? Does anyone want to stop the run? Does anyone want to knock down a pass? Atlanta might have the worst defense in football. It doesn't help that they play in that dome where everybody can come in and run up and down and set, you know, their own personal time records. And it doesn't help that they play in a division against the Saints and Panthers. And Tampa Bay, you know, Lovie Smith, yeah, he still doesn't know a damn thing about offense. Anybody that advocates that hard to bring in Josh McCown as their starting quarterback, no, that's not the answer, sorry. He's going to take that young defense and point them in the right direction, but he still got to get a clue on offense. The return of Muscle Hamster, Doug Martin, fun running back to watch. That might be the only bright spot on that offense. A lot of 13-10 games in their future, I believe.
Well, look at this, though. Lovie Smith got a very bad offensive Bears team to a Super Bowl on the strength of a defense. So he clearly knows how to coach the defense. He got Rex Grossman into a Super Bowl.
I see your point, but Rex Grossman has about four times the arm that Josh McCown has. So Rex Grossman was a bad quarterback, not because of his physical limitations, but because he didn't know which way the ball was going. But he got the ball in the air occasionally so that guys can make enough plays for them to get to a Super Bowl. But, yeah, so Rex Grossman is one thing, but Josh McCown, if he takes Josh McCown to a Super Bowl, I can't even come up with a statement to follow that up because I couldn't believe that could ever happen. But, yeah, that Lovie Smith should go to the NFL Hall of Fame as a head coach if he gets Josh McCown to the Super Bowl. How's that for a strong statement?
That is he'll be in our Hall of Fame anyways.
No kidding. Oh, that mighty entertaining NFC West. How does it look to you?
Interesting. That's the best division in football. It's not going to get any publicity. That's four solid teams now. The Rams lost their quarterback, so Sam Bradford not being around isn't gonna help. But they have, I mean, every team in that division plays monster defense. Are you kidding? I mean, the Rams, the Cardinals, the 49ers, the Seahawks, everybody in that division gets after it, and it's a lot of fun over there. I do have the Seahawks winning that division again. They've improved the offense. That defense is still world beating, and they don't lose at home. It doesn't happen. So if they can chalk up 7-8 wins at home, all they got to do is go 500 on the road. This is what we talk about every year with Seattle. Go 500 on the road, take care of business at home, which I think every team wants to do, but they actually can do it. They'll win that division.
If they go anything worse than 7-1 at home, it'll be a major upset.
It would be. I have the other wild card team coming out of this division. However, it's not the 49ers. I have the Arizona Cardinals coming out of this division as the other wild card team, the best non-playoff team last year. So every year we always talk about that, best team that didn't make the playoffs. Yeah. Well, a lot of times that team ends up making it the next year. They get to play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. San Francisco's taken some hits on that defense. Alden Smith suspended for 9 games. This McDonald guy just smacked his woman around a little bit, so he's staring at a possible suspension. Whether that happens this season or not, though, it's just more negative focus on the team. I think their defense, all it has to do is come down just a tick to offset that offense, because that offense is good but not great. Kaepernick did not have that meteoric second season like he had that first season. I think he's established himself as like a top second tier quarterback in the league instead of a top first tier quarterback, which is good. Most teams would take that. But I think San Francisco is going to find themselves just slightly vulnerable on defense in that tough division, just enough that they'll fall just short. They could win, they could go 10-6. That's very possible. That you always have a 10-6 or 11-5 team every once in a while that misses out on the playoffs. And that division is so good that I think that team just outside looking in is going to be San Francisco.
Wow, I can't believe you're taking San Francisco to miss the playoffs after making it to the NFC title game last year. One of the best conference title games we've ever seen between the Niners and the Seahawks, and that rivalry, that whole the coach versus coach rivalry. The teams hate each other, the coaches hate each other, and now you have San Fran just falling all the way off and not even making it to the playoffs. Yeah, that's unbelievable. I concur. You mentioned the personnel losses in defense. You talked about Alden Smith suspended to week 9, their stud pass rusher. You mentioned Ray McDonald, the important piece on defensive end who might be in big trouble for smacking around his pregnant wife. Now with new policy on violence in the NFL, that he got arrested like as soon as that policy was announced by Roger Goodell. Like 2 days later, his wife wound up getting smacked. It's like, dude, are you not paying attention? Are you trying to get kicked out of the league? What the hell?
He picked a bad day. He picked a bad day to smack his woman around, I'll tell you that.
And a bad day to quit sniffing glue. You didn't even mention Navarro Bowman, all-pro linebacker, cannot still get on the field off of that gnarly-looking injury that that conference title game. He might be back about week 7 or so, but he's definitely not there yet. And then a big-time run stuffer in the middle, Glenn Dorsey. Most of the season he's going to miss due to injury. Way too many injuries on defense. I do not like San Francisco's chances this year. You talked about Colin Kaepernick. I still think his development is hurt by the lack of big-time playmakers at wide receiver. His most explosive receiver still looks like it's Crabtree, and Michael Crabtree blows. So when you got that as your best guy, you know, I love Anquan Boldin. He's still maybe one of the best possession wide receivers in the history of football, but he's only getting older. Vernon Davis is a one-direction tight end. He gets on that seam and runs that go route really, really, really nicely. Doesn't really do anything else. He doesn't know how to go any other direction. I don't know how good Kaepernick is because that's still, as far as I'm concerned, haven't seen him with a good complement of offensive players around him. Frank Gore gets worse and worse every single year. This might be Coach Insane's last hurrah, man. This might be it for Jim Harbaugh. There's so much turmoil in the between him and the front office. There's so much discord there. I think if they don't make the playoffs, I think he's out.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Alex Smith have that team on the doorstep of the Super Bowl if their punt returner could hold on to the ball?
Oh my God! If Kenny Williams' son had some hands, they might be in this. It might have been in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, so when you think about it, you take Alex Smith, you trade him for Colin Kaepernick. Yeah, he gets you to the Super Bowl the next year, but what's really changed on that offense other than everybody's just getting older?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you with Seattle winning the division again. Of course, you know, that unbelievable home field advantage. There's not much to talk about with Seattle, just a few questions, a few things to keep your eye on through the year. Does Russell Wilson continue to progress? Does Percy Harvin stay on the field? And does the NFL succeed in stifling the Legion of Boom? I still think they're out to get him. I still don't think they want that style of defense to be prevalent because I think that the NFL thinks that's a ratings killer to have defenses that physical and that impressive holding down all this offense. It won't make me turn away. I love seeing that type of football, but I think the league thinks that most people do not want to see that, and I think they're going to continue to exercise a campaign to try to stifle strong defenses like the Seattle Seahawks.
That was the most fun to watch blowout Super Bowl I've ever witnessed. And we watched a lot of them growing up. A lot of blowout Super Bowls. Super Bowl was always a joke. But of all those were, they were always boring. You know, nothing was ever exciting about the 49ers and the Chargers or the Bills getting their doors blown off 3 out of 4 times. But the way that Seattle dismantled Denver, you just wanted them to keep scoring. I just wanted, it's like, you know what, run this thing up and just keep going. And they did. And it was just beautiful to watch. It was absolutely beautiful to watch because they were showing how a great defense can make your offense better. Where Denver just had nothing. Denver had nothing that whole game. And that was the best offense, quote-unquote, coming in. And Seattle just let them do absolutely nothing.
And on that day, Seattle was much the better team.
Yeah, I don't know if they played 100 times if Seattle would win 50 of them. Maybe not. But that day, whew, and it got ugly, and it got ugly fast. And it's what you play for.
I loved watching the Cardinals last year like you did, the best team not to make the playoffs. And unfortunately, I'm going to take them to not make the playoffs again this year for the exact same reason as the 49ers. Just too many losses on defense. They lost Carlos Dansby to free agency. They lost Darrell Washington to a year-long suspension. He was a very important tackle machine, big part of that defense. They lost defensive end Darnell Dockett to injury. It's the exact same thing with the 49ers. Just too many pieces missing on defense. I just don't think they can overcome it. The couple of offensive weapons that I'm going to watch to see if they keep developing would be the running back Andre Ellington and the wide receiver Michael Floyd. But outside of that, I don't think it's going to go well for Arizona. Just too many injuries. And St. Louis, you know, too bad Robert Quinn and Chris Long and all those defensive linemen are so studly, because that's what kept Michael Sam from making that team. That was I almost felt it when he got drafted that was the wrong team to draft him, because they had so much talent on the D line that he stood almost no chance of making a team, and that's exactly what happened. I'm not a fan of Sam Bradford, as you well know, so I don't think that's a big loss, but I just don't think they have enough to compete in that division, whether they had Bradford or not.
So did I miss your other wild card pick here?
No, because I didn't say it.
Oh, okay.
I got two teams out of the same division. I've got the Detroit Lions making the playoffs out of the NFC North and sneaking in the back door, despite that terrible defense. I got the Bears.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
So,
that offense is still too good.
So who's your Super Bowl pick?
I am taking
our game for tomorrow night.
I am taking the New Orleans Saints to emerge out of the NFC.
Wow.
I understand that if Seattle once again has home field advantage, that means New Orleans would have to go up there and knock them out. But, hey, there's a chance that Seattle might lose just enough games that New Orleans can have the home field advantage. And I think that might be the second-best home field advantage in the league, only behind Seattle. I can't imagine any team coming into New Orleans for a conference title game and beating the Saints. I'm taking New Orleans to make the Super Bowl to go against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos, making a return trip. That defense is loaded. Peyton's on a mission again. We saw what happened last year when he played like he was on a mission. He played like a bat out of hell. I think he's going to do it again. And this time I'm going to take the Denver Broncos to overcome and persevere, and Peyton Manning gets his second ring to match his little brother Eli and rides off into the sunset.
Well, this year I also have someone getting their second ring, quite interestingly. Out of the AFC, I'm copying you, so you're always a year late to the party. I'm taking the Cincinnati Bengals to go to the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that defense is great, and I think Andy Dalton will... I think their whole focus this year is going to be to get him prepared to not shit the bed in the playoffs. I really like them. I think they have a fairly easy path. I think they could end up home field or pretty close to it. That's a good team. However, I have them losing to a team not going to win their division, but they're going to be road warriors just like the last time in the Green Bay Packers.
Look at you with your hometown guys.
Well, sometimes you get a feeling. Aaron Rodgers will get a, I think he'll get a second ring.
Well, that would be a couple of very fun Super Bowls to watch that we picked there. Cincinnati and Green Bay doing battle, or Denver and New Orleans. I hope we both are somewhat close to our predictions, because I think those are going to be very fun teams to keep an eye on all year long, all four of them.
Yeah. And I need, and I'm looking for three in a row on my AFC pick.
That's right.
So do you have the whistle warmed up?
I think I've left it around here somewhere. It's been a while since I've used it, so I got to find it. There we go. Thursday night football to open the season. It is the Fail Mary rematch. The Green Bay Packers, who last time they were up in the Pacific Northwest, got completely hosed on a terrible official's call to lose a primetime Monday night affair on a Fail Mary pass to Golden Tate in the end zone that he claimed he caught, but he clearly didn't.
No,
so Green Bay,
MD, I believe it was MD Jennings caught the ball, and then Golden Tate caught MD Jennings.
And somehow that was ruled a touchdown.
Yes.
Still don't get it. So Green Bay gets to open this campaign going up to the world champion Seattle Seahawks with the 12th man, the greatest home field advantage in football. And no surprise, Green Bay a big underdog going up to Seattle. Green Bay gets 6 points at the Seahawks. Jason, who you got?
Well, I'll tell you, that's changed since last night, because last night it was a 6.5, so there's been some money shifting Green Bay's way, apparently, slowly. Surprisingly large line, so I'm taking those points. I actually really like Green Bay here. If you ever want to have a situation like this, yeah, you've got the Super Bowl winning team playing at home. That's always, it never seems to be a good situation, especially with the caliber of team coming in Green Bay, and a team with a chip on their shoulder. I think their intention is going to be to beat them without having it have to come down to a Hail Mary. I don't know if they're going to succeed, but I know they'll at least cover those 6.
I completely concur. I think Green Bay's got a chip on their shoulder. I think they might have a memory of that last game, and they want to go out there and put it away, make no doubt. I'm taking Green Bay to win.
Yeah, that'll be Seattle, a good start. That'll make my Super Bowl pick look good.
Putting Seattle in an 0-1 hole at home to start off the year. And another factor I'm thinking about is I've been reading a little bit about the offensive coordinator up in Seattle, Daryl Bevel, wants to open things up with Russell Wilson and make him not so much the system quarterback or the game manager that he's been his first couple of years in the league. And that's dangerous. I don't know if you want to go off of the script, so to speak. You've got beast mode back there, Marshawn Lynch. You got Skittles back there just waiting to run over people. Take advantage of that. You got a pretty decent backup running back in Robert Turbin. You could go and win a lot of games in Seattle the way they've been doing it the last couple of years, with just a sledgehammer attack at running back and the game management of Russell Wilson. The risk that you take trying to make Russell Wilson into a more dynamic quarterback and open up your offense is you might have him start making mistakes that he would not normally make. Now, it's entirely possible that he might see things and see the mistakes happen before he makes them and decide to tuck it away and run and get away from potential mistakes. He might be smart enough to do that, but I don't know. I just got a feeling he might want to show a little bit more. He might want to prove to the world that he's more than just a system quarterback. I like Green Bay 31-28, and I think it might be decided on a late mistake by Russell Wilson, a late interception to set up a game-winning field goal by the Packers.
Wow. Well, I'm gonna go 23-21 Seattle. I think they kick a lot of field goals. So, And doesn't it feel good to be picking games again?
It does. It's almost a little intimidating, because I know that we've got a full slate coming up this weekend that we're going to have 15 more to go through.
But we'll have an hour to do it.
Yes, it won't be nearly as rushed as it normally is, so that's the good thing. We are out of time on the live show. Those picks will be up on our blog this weekend in much less detail at blogspot.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to hear our after show. Just search for In Much Less Detail the podcast. We'll see you on the other side. Now into our VIP after show portion of our program, where we will talk about our Buster draft tonight. We had our first Buster League draft. We talked about the concept before that we wanted to set up a league that took all the negative things that players can do and rewarded them for it. And we set it up where only quarterbacks and defensive teams, not individual players, but full defensive teams were the only two positions available, because as Jason said, it was really hard to set up a league that rewarded you with negative points for those other positions, receiver and quarterback and kicker. There's really only so much negative things those positions could do.
Yeah, and this is really just, as you would say, it's just testies that we're doing this year. So we're just proving a concept here. The draft was fun. It was an 8-round draft. It took about 8 minutes, which was interesting how fast it was. Like, hey, you know, everybody.
Because there's only four teams.
Yes, there's only four teams, so we're only picking about 32 quarterbacks and defenses. It was surprisingly strategic as you got past about the second or third round. As funny as I've got these horrible players all queued up, and I'm watching them all come off the board, and I actually found myself like, oh, man, you took my guy. It's like the goal is to pick the worst, but it doesn't matter because you're still just trying to win. And I know you had commented about how this almost forces you to use a different skill set, use some different brain muscles, and acknowledge the bad play and almost kind of revel in it. And it was interesting. Eli Manning was the first pick of the draft overall. I had the second pick.
Isn't an indictment of the Giants season coming up.
Right, we talked about that, didn't we? About Eli being possibly the worst, best quarterback of all time. How could a two-time winning Super Bowl quarterback be the first pick of a Buster draft? I was glorious when I was able to pick Geno Smith at number two. And then to come back on the flip side and take the Dallas defense, who I think is going to be historically awful this year. Somebody, did you draft? I don't know who drafted the Bears defense. That would be you, because I think Dallas and the Bears are going to be something special on the horrible side. If this works, I mean, if this ends up being fun, because the draft was fun, if this concept works, obviously next year we'll do a little bit more forum shopping, because what I would like to do would be to incorporate more teams, some running backs, some wide receivers. I'd like to see more negative stats. Yahoo just doesn't support the negative stats for those positions. Even though there are stats that are kept, there's drops, there's, you know, yards per attempt. There's really horrible things that are out there, but it's weighting it, you know, because you don't want a guy who goes out and has one carry for 4 yards and that's it. And it's four. What you want to do is reward the guy who goes out there and has 18 carries for 17 yards. So there's got to be
also known as the Barry Sanders playoff career.
Oh, that was no. 17 might have been his playoff high, because he always went to Green Bay and went like 17 carries for minus 6 yards. How could it happen every year? But it happened that way all the time. Detroit would sneak in at the very last week, and then the next week they would head up to Lambeau, and Barry Sanders just could not find. Well, it's because they were playing in the cold and the snow and the ice. You know, you probably had 11 in the box waiting for him there. And it's just don't even cover the wide receivers. Just stop Barry Sanders, and you're going to win the game. And it happened all too frequently.
Every time.
Years.
So the Buster League is the teams every week, the starting lineup is comprised of three quarterbacks and two defenses.
Yeah.
And to me, that set the strategy of you needed to grab those terrible quarterbacks first, because even though those bad defenses, the way it's set up, can get you way more points on the aggregate, there's a lot more horrible things that a bad defense can do than a bad quarterback on average. You still needed to get the worst quarterbacks as soon as possible because you're filling three spots every week in your starting lineup instead of two. So that's what I was looking at when it came to me for the third pick. And my first two options were already taken. Even in a buster draft, even in a concept that I've never participated in before because it doesn't exist anywhere else as far as I'm aware, the two guys that I would have considered first or second were Eli Manning and Geno Smith, the two New York quarterbacks. And they were both the first ones taken. So I'm like, I don't fucking believe this. Even in this format, I still get screwed on my pick. However, I was doing the draft on Google Chrome, and my draft room never crashed, so I was able to take every player that I actually wanted to take when it was my turn. So with my third pick, I took EJ Manuel of Buffalo because he seems to be sometimes as clueless as Geno Smith.
Yeah, I had Geno Smith as my first pick. I came back on the flip side and took the Dallas defense. Came right back at number 10 and took Sean Hill, who is Sam Bradford's replacement. Very similar to, I think, your Derek Carr selection. I think what we're looking at are guys just kind of thrust into jobs.
And pretty much set up to fail.
And yeah, absolutely set up to fail. There's still... This morning I'm up early and I'm feeding the baby and I'm watching NFL Network and it's a lot of Derek Carr love right now. And I think that's all – I don't think that's going to last too long. He's not.
I don't understand.
He's not throwing to anybody.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
His defense is garbage. Darren McFadden can't stay healthy. They can't run – so he is – not in a good position. Maybe he has a decent O-line. He definitely has a better O-line than his brother had in Houston.
It can't be any worse than that.
He's not getting sacked 80 times this year. But I don't think he's playing enough to get sacked 80 times this year. He's not the starter all year for that team. I don't think I'm going out on a limb here. This is the other interesting thing about the Buster draft is now we get to actually talk a little bit about those bad teams that we didn't get to talk about during our recaps, because these are the teams that we were all like, oh yeah, they're going to be shit. Well, now we can talk about why they're shit because we drafted all these guys in our Buster draft.
The bad teams that we don't talk about during the season because we're busy highlighting the good teams when we make our picks in our highlight games. So we're not going to talk about Jacksonville and Dallas very much.
No, these are definitely our in much less detail teams. However, some good defenses, though. I have the Green Bay defense because it was interesting, and this is where the strategy started coming in, especially with the defenses, as you started getting later into the draft, those defenses started getting good.
Well, decent.
Mediocre.
Yeah.
You know. And so did the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks got a little bit harder to pick as well. So I am starting this week against you. There's only four teams. So this week I'm playing against you. I've got Geno Smith, Ryan Tannehill, and I'm actually starting Matt Castle this week, who was my last pick. But again, I have Sean Hill and Matt Castle going up against each other this week. But Minnesota's defense is so awful. I think Sean Hill actually has the potential to play better, so I'm going to go with the guy who I think is going to do worse, and that's Matt Castle. So this is, again, it's a completely different mindset when you're playing matchups, is you're trying to take the guy who's going to go out and fail and play the whole game. For the other thing, too, is, you know, that's the other trick, is you're not just trying to draft guys who are bad, you're trying to draft guys who are going to be consistently bad, because everybody can have a bad game. That's hard to predict.
It is a different mindset. For example, the auto selection of my team put Brian Hoyer in the starting lineup. I have four quarterbacks and four defenses on my team, but we're starting three quarterbacks. The automatic lineup set up Brian Hoyer for me because going by projected fantasy points on the season – they're projecting him to amass 24 points. And they're projecting EJ Manuel to amass 88, so he's obviously a starter as well. But they had Hoyer starting over Josh McCown, who I picked because they have Josh McCown actually amassing a negative point value. They think Josh McCown is good because it's
he's gonna ventriculate the ball down the field.
Ventriculate the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. Matriculate, ventriculate, or whatever it is. I'm curious because are you looking at your team right now?
I thought I was, yeah.
So you have the projected stats. I'm projected to see what the season total is for that Bears defense because I'm curious because we both think that – you think the Bears are going to have the worst defense in football. I think the Cowboys will. I'm just curious what they gave you as a points total for that Bears defense projected for the season.
I don't know about the worst – I don't know if I ever said the Bears would have the worst defense in football, but I do think they're going to still be pretty bad. And of my four defenses, they are indeed projected to have more points than the other three. They're projected to have 368 points on the year.
Oh, wow. Okay, because I've drafted that Dallas defense as my first defense. Just take a guess what they're projected, just off of our point system.
Oh, boy. It's got to be over 400, right?
Yeah. Well, Minnesota last year was the number one worst defense. They had 404 points for the whole year. Dallas is projected at 489 points.
Oh!
On the negative side for the season. So that's looking like a smart draft pick for me. I did not have that information when I made my pick. Dallas wasn't the worst defense last year by this point system. That has got to be by far and away the worst total.
That's over 100 points more than my worst defense projected. That's incredible.
So my saving grace will hopefully against you, because you're projected to clobber me this week by about 30 points of awfulness. So my saving grace is that the 49ers this week just light them up.
Well, it's going to be hard because I drafted the Colts defense, and they have to go to Denver and Peyton Manning in week one. And I think that's going to be a monster game for me. Just a monster.
You know,
the Bears,
weren't the Colts the giant killers last year, though?
Yes, that was the that was part of their narrative, is that they kept taking on these big teams. They had Peyton Manning and the undefeated Broncos come into Indianapolis on a Sunday night, if I recall correctly, and Andrew Luck got the victory over Peyton Manning.
They whooped them pretty good, too, didn't they?
Yeah, because Peyton threw about three interceptions, I believe.
So you don't want that to happen on Sunday?
No. I want Peyton Manning to have the same opening that he had last season when he put up seven touchdown passes and clobbered the Baltimore Ravens.
The way our league is set up, the points allowed and yards allowed are great. You want to give up a lot of points and a lot of yards, and you'll accumulate a ton of points. But as you start chipping away at those, as you get sacks and picks and you force fumbles or you score a touchdown, so as you do all the good things, you take this huge block of points that you could accumulate and you start whittling that down.
I'm looking at your scoring system and the number of categories here, which I never really, studied very much before. Very, very eclectic group of categories here. I didn't know you had three and outs as a category for.
You want to give up long touchdown drives, or you just want to give up the one play 80-yard touchdown drive. That's what you want to give up.
That's very interesting that you actually have a mechanism to penalize teams that achieved a three and out. So I feel even better about starting the Colts now, because I don't imagine them stopping Peyton Manning and getting a three and out at any point on Sunday night. I cannot see that happening.
So this will be fun. This will be probably VIP material all year long. I don't really see this breaking into our regular show or our regular recaps, but I think we'll be probably. I think we'll keep a little more up-to-date on this league and our other league all year long.
Yeah, we'll certainly have the room for it with hour-long shows.
Yeah, I have a suspicion that we may keep this format for a while. We had talked about maybe doing this for the whole regular season. If it works, I don't know if we're going to have the – after we do a pick show on Friday or Saturday, I'm assuming – and we have a full hour to do it. I don't know if we're going to want to go back to that half hour
Oh, that frenzied half hour trying to get all 15 or 16 games in.
When we would have a week with a full slate of games, and we would get to that about 22 minutes into a 30 minute show, and have to do the other 12 games. And only basically get to say a sentence about each game. Now we can maybe say two sentences about each game. Or, you know, we could spend the first half hour of the show doing highlight games and the other half an hour talking about the rest of it. We actually might get to talk about, more games.
Maybe more than three highlight games?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. This is because we actually start to get doing prep again here.
Well, I was going to ask you, and I might as well do it live here on the show.
Sure. Put me on the spot.
When are we doing our pick show for the weekend? Week one is coming up.
Yeah, I'm free. I'm free both nights.
Okay.
I was always a bigger fan of Friday, just in case we would pick up any listeners on Saturday. Gives them a, you know. But I know you were always more in favor of Saturday night. This time around, doesn't really matter. I'm not going anywhere. I don't have any plans. Can't leave a newborn baby at home on a Saturday night to go out. So I will leave that up to you.
I don't. Oh boy, that's now you're putting me on the spot. I don't know.
Of course, that's called I turn the tables.
Yeah, I tell you the main reason I always wanted to do Saturday was. Any late injury, these coaches are so secretive with their injury reports and who's going to play and who's going to, you know, not start but maybe get in the game later and who's going to be completely benched. And just Saturday gave you just that much more time for intel, for any information about, well, now this team has made their flight to get ready for the game on Sunday and we know so-and-so isn't going to play because he didn't even make the flight. You know, just more information, just more, you know, the things like that are important when you come down to situations. Like, I definitely remember one time last year where you were going to pick the Cleveland Browns in a game until I informed you that Brian Hoyer was down and Brandon Wheaton was up as the starting quarterback, and you immediately said, whoever the Cleveland opponent is, I now have them instead of Cleveland because Brandon Wheaton was that terrible. So that's just why I always like to wait as long as possible, just getting as much information as possible. But the reason I'm hesitating now is because it's the first week of the season. There's really no information or injuries to wait around and figure out on Saturday night. So we could probably do Friday night for week one because there's no real point to wait until Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Friday definitely works for me.
Now, what time? So we have any time we want. We don't have to wait till 10 o'clock.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I would say I'd be ready to – well, usually we need about – how long would we do prep for? About 45 minutes or so?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I'd be comfortable with a 9 o'clock show.
Okay, that sounds great to me.
I tell you, 9 works a lot better than 10.
Oh, yes, no doubt about that. It's going on 11 o'clock Central Time now, and on a normal show, we would just be finishing up our VIP after show at this point, but we would have started at 10, and we would have been a lot more rushed, and we would have had to do our preview show in a half hour's time instead of an hour, and there'd be so much that I probably would still want to talk about in the VIP after show and still wouldn't get it all in, and then I'd just be frustrated and go off the air, you know.
Yeah, because the sniper
would get me, and I'd be like, man, I had this, I wanted to say this, that, and the other, but I've got nothing left to say about the NFC. I said everything that I wanted to say, and I assume you did as well. So.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm feeling good. I think we agree on way too much. What the hell?
Well, at least it's not like we agree on the Super Bowl teams.
No, we definitely don't.
All the playoff teams, you know, there's a little variance in there. But, yeah, the top teams, the chalk teams, it's hard to get away from, you know, the especially in the AFC yesterday. We had the same division champs for all four divisions. But how can you get away from New England in the East? How can you get away from Cincinnati in the North? Denver in the West. Who's picking someone other than Denver to win the AFC? You know, so it's just really, and Indianapolis in the South seems to be the class of that division. So yeah, we have a lot of the same picks, but you kind of have to be crazy to pick against some of those teams.
Well, that's great. I will see you Friday night.
Friday night, 9 p.m., we are back and ready for week 1 of the NFL season. Football is back, baby. We will see you guys then.